Thank you all for coming on the Thursday afternoon before spring break. I think that's well above and beyond the call of duty. I am glad that Samuel Taylor Coleridge has had a sweeter call for you today. I'm going to be reading several poems of Coleridge, all complete except for The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. I'll just be reading a couple of parts of that. So thanks, everyone, for coming. We'll start with some literary criticism. On Donne's poetry. With Donne, whose muse on dromedary trots, wreathe iron pokers into true love knots. Rhyme's sturdy cripple, fancy's maze and clue, wit's forge and fire blast, meaning's press and screw. Another piece of literary criticism, a little more intimate. To William Wordsworth, composed on the night after his recitation of a poem on the growth of an individual mind. That was the prelude. Friend of the wise and teacher of the good, into my heart have I received that lay more than historic, that prophetic lay wherein, high theme by thee first sung aright, of the foundations and the building up of a human spirit thou hast dared to tell what may be told, to the understanding mind revealable, and what within the mind by vital breathings secret as the soul of vernal growth oft quickens in the heart thoughts all too deep for words. Theme hard as high, of smiles spontaneous and mysterious fears, the firstborn they of reason and twin birth, of tides obedient to external force and currents self-determined, as might seem, or by some inner power, of moments awful, now in thy inner life, and now abroad, when power streamed from thee, and thy soul received the light reflected, as a light bestowed, of fancies fair, and milder hours of youth, Hyblean murmurs of poetic thought, industrious in its joy, in vales and glens, native or outland, lakes and famous hills, or on the lonely high road, when the stars were rising, or by secret mountain streams, the guides and the companions of thy way. Of more than fancy, of the social sense distending wide, and man beloved as man, where France in all her towns lay vibrating like some becalmed bark beneath the burst of heaven's immediate thunder, when no cloud is visible or shadow on the main. For thou wert there, thine own brows garlanded amid the tremor of a realm aglow, amid a mighty nation jubilant, when from the general heart of humankind hope sprang forth like a full-born deity. Of that dear hope, afflicted and struck down, so summoned homeward, thenceforth calm and sure from the dread watchtower of man's absolute self, with light unwaning on her eyes, to look far on, herself a glory to behold, the angel of the vision. Then last strain of duty, chosen laws controlling choice, action, and joy, an Orphic song indeed, a song divine of high and passionate thoughts to their own music chanted. O great bard, ere yet that last strain dying awed the air, with steadfast eye I viewed thee in the choir of ever-enduring men. The truly great have all one age, and from one visible space shed influence. They, both in power and act, are permanent, and time is not with them, save as it worketh for them, they in it. Nor less a sacred role than those of old, and to be placed as they, with gradual fame among the archives of mankind. Thy work makes audible a linked lay of truth profound, a sweet, continuous lay, not learnt, but native, her own natural notes. Ah, as I listened with a heart forlorn, the pulses of my being beat anew. And even as life returns upon the drowned, life's joy rekindling roused a throng of pains, keen pangs of love, awakening as a babe turbulent with an outcry in the heart, and fears self-willed that shunned the eye of hope, and hope that scarce would know itself from fear. Sense of past youth, and manhood come in vain, and genius given, and knowledge won in vain. And all which I had culled in wood walks wild, and all which patient toil had reared, and all commune with thee, had opened out. But flowers strewed on my course, and borne upon my bier in the same coffin, for the self-same grave. That way no more. And ill beseems it me, who came a welcomer in herald's guise, singing of glory and futurity, to wander back on such unhealthful road, plucking the poisons of self-harm. And ill such intertwine beseems triumphal wreaths strewed before thy advancing. Nor do thou, sage bard, impair the memory of that hour, of thy communion with my nobler mind by pity or grief, already felt too long. Nor let my words import more blame than needs. The tumult rose and ceased, for peace is nigh, where wisdom's voice has found a listening heart. Amid the howl of more than wintry storms, the halcyon hears the voice of vernal hours already on the wing. Eve following eve, dear tranquil time, when the sweet sense of home is sweetest, moments for their own sake hailed and more desired, more precious for thy song, in silence listening, like a devout child, my soul lay passive, by thy various strain driven as in surges now beneath the stars, with momentary stars of my own birth, fair constellated foam, still darting off into the darkness, now a tranquil sea, outspread and bright, yet swelling to the moon. And when, O friend, my comforter and guide, strong in thyself and powerful to give strength, thy long-sustained song finally closed, and thy deep voice had ceased. Yet thou thyself wert still before my eyes, and round us both that happy vision of beloved faces. Scarce conscious, and yet conscious of its close, I sat, my being blended in one thought. Thought, was it? Or aspiration? or resolve. Absorbed, yet hanging still upon the sound. And when I rose, I found myself in prayer. Sometimes the contact with the supernatural is not so happy. Parts 4 and 5 of The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. I fear thee, ancient mariner. I fear thy skinny hand. And thou art long and lank and brown, as is the ribbed sea sand. I fear thee and thy glittering eye, and thy skinny hand so brown. Fear not, thou wedding guest, this body dropped not down. Alone, alone, all alone, alone, on a wide, wide sea. And never a saint took pity on my soul in agony. The many men, so beautiful, and they all dead did lie, and a thousand, thousand slimy things lived on, and so did I. I looked upon the rotting sea, and drew my eyes away. I looked upon the rotting deck, and there the dead men lay. I looked to heaven, and tried to pray, but or ever a prayer had gushed, a wicked whisper came, and made my heart as dry as dust. I closed my lids, and kept them close, and the balls like pulses beat, for the sky and the sea and the sea and the sky lay like a load on my weary eye, and the dead were at my feet. The cold sweat melted from their limbs, nor rot nor reek did they. The look with which they looked on me had never passed away. An orphan's curse would drag to hell a spirit from on high, but, oh, more horrible than that is the curse in a dead man's eye. 7 days, 7 nights I saw that curse, and yet I could not die. The moving moon went up the sky, and nowhere did abide. Softly she was going up, and a star or two beside. Her beams bemocked the sultry main, like April hoar-frost spread. But where the ship's huge shadow lay, the charmed water burnt alway, a still and awful red. Beyond the shadow of the ship, I watched the water snakes. They moved in tracks of shining white, and when they reared, the elfish light fell off in hoary flakes. Within the shadow of the ship, I watched their rich attire. Blue, glossy green, and velvet black, they coiled and swam, and every track was a flash of golden fire. Oh, happy, living things! No tongue their beauty might declare. A spring of love gushed from my heart, and I blessed them unaware. Sure my kind saint took pity on me, and I blessed them unaware. The selfsame moment I could pray, and from my neck so free the albatross fell off and sank like lead into the sea. O sleep, it is a gentle thing, beloved from pole to pole, To Mary, Queen, the praise be given. She sent the gentle sleep from heaven that slid into my soul. The silly buckets on the deck that had so long remained, I dreamt that they were filled with dew, and when I awoke, it rained. My lips were wet, my throat was cold, my garments all were dank. Sure, I had drunken in my dreams, and still my body drank. I moved and could not feel my limbs. I was so light, almost I thought that I had died in sleep and was a blessed ghost. And soon I heard a roaring wind. It did not come anear, but with its sound it shook the sails that were so thin and sere. The upper air burst into life, and 100 fire flags sheen. To and fro they were hurried about, and to and fro and in and out the wan stars danced between. And the coming wind did roar more loud, and the sails did sigh like sedge, and the rain poured down from one black cloud. The moon was at its edge. The thick black cloud was cleft, and still the moon was at its side, like waters shot from some high crag. The lightning fell with never a jag, a river steep and wide. The loud wind never reached the ship, yet now the ship moved on. Beneath the lightning and the moon, the dead men gave a groan. They groaned, they stirred. They all uprose, nor spake, nor moved their eyes. It had been strange, even in a dream, to have seen those dead men rise. The helmsman steered. The ship moved on, yet never a breeze upblew. The mariners all gan work the ropes where they were wont to do. They raised their limbs like lifeless tools. We were a ghastly crew. The body of my brother's son stood by me, knee to knee. The body and I pulled at one rope, but he said naught to me. I fear thee, ancient mariner. Be calm, thou wedding guest. 'Twas not those souls that fled in pain, which to their courses come again, but a troop of spirits blessed. For when it dawned, they dropped their arms and clustered round the mast. Sweet sounds rose slowly through their mouths and from their bodies passed. Around, around flew each sweet sound, then darted to the sun. Slowly the sounds came back again, now mixed, now one by one. Sometimes a dropping from the sky, I heard the skylark sing. Sometimes all little birds that are, how they seem to fill the sea and air with their sweet jargoning. And now 'twas like all instruments, now like a lonely flute, and now it is an angel's song that makes the heavens be mute. It ceased, yet still the sails made on a pleasant noise till noon, a noise like of a hidden brook in the leafy mouth of June, that to the sleeping woods all night singeth a quiet tune. Till noon we quietly sailed on, yet never a breeze did breathe. Slowly and smoothly went the ship, moved onward from beneath. Under the keel, 9 fathom deep, from the land of mist and snow, the spirit slid, and it was he that made the ship to go. The sails at noon left off their tune, and the ship stood still also. The sun right up above the mast had fixed her to the ocean, but in a minute she gan stir with a short, uneasy motion, backwards and forwards half her length with a short, uneasy motion. Then, like a pawing horse let go, she made a sudden bound. It flung the blood into my head, and I fell down in a swound. How long in that same fit I lay, I have not to declare. But ere my living life returned, I heard, and in my soul discerned, two voices in the air. "Is it he?" quoth one. "Is this the man by him who died on cross? With his cruel bow he laid full low the harmless albatross. The spirit who bideth by himself in the land of mist and snow, he loved the bird that loved the man who shot him with his bow." The other was a softer voice, as soft as honeydew. Quoth he, "The man hath penance done, and penance more will do." This is the second part of Kubla Khan. It comes after the first part, which is the prose poem that introduces it. Here's my daring critical statement for the day. If you've seen Kubla Khan, you know there's a whole long lying excuse of a misdirection at the beginning. I think it's a complete poem. In Xanadu did Kubla Khan a stately pleasure dome decree, where Alph, the sacred river, ran through caverns measureless to man, down to a sunless sea. So twice 5 miles of fertile ground with walls and towers were girdled round, and there were gardens bright with sinuous rills, where blossomed many an incense-bearing tree. And here were forests ancient as the hills, enfolding sunny spots of greenery. But oh, that deep romantic chasm which slanted down the green hill athwart a cedarn cover, a savage place, as holy and enchanted as e'er beneath a waning moon was haunted by woman wailing for her demon lover. And from this chasm, with ceaseless turmoil seething, as if this earth in fast thick pants were breathing, a mighty fountain momently was forced, amid whose swift half-intermitted burst huge fragments vaulted like rebounding hail, or chaffy grain beneath the thresher's flail. And mid these dancing rocks at once and ever, it flung up momently the sacred river. 5 miles meandering with a mazy motion through wood and dale the sacred river ran, then reached the caverns measureless to man, and sank in tumult to a lifeless ocean. And mid this tumult Kubla heard from far ancestral voices prophesying war. The shadow of the dome of pleasure floated midway on the waves, where was heard the mingled measure from the fountain and the caves. It was a miracle of rare device, a sunny pleasure dome with caves of ice. A damsel with a dulcimer in a vision once I saw. It was an Abyssinian maid, and on her dulcimer she played, singing of Mount Abora. Could I revive within me her symphony and song, to such a deep delight 'twould win me, that with music loud and long I would build that dome in air, that sunny dome, those caves of ice. And all who heard should see them there, and all should cry, "Beware, beware his flashing eyes, his floating hair. Weave a circle round him thrice, and close your eyes with holy dread, for he on honeydew hath fed, and drunk the milk of paradise." My final reading is for Eric. Frost at Midnight. The frost performs its secret ministry, unhelped by any wind. The owlet's cry came loud, and hark, again, loud as before. The inmates of my cottage, all at rest, have left me to that solitude which suits abstruser musings, save that at my side my cradled infant slumbers peacefully. 'Tis calm indeed, so calm that it disturbs and vexes meditation with its strange and extreme silentness. Sea, hill and wood, this populous village. Sea and hill and wood, with all the numberless goings on of life, inaudible as dreams. The thin blue flame lies on my low burnt fire and quivers not. Only that film, which fluttered on the grate, still flutters there, the sole unquiet thing. Methinks its motion in this hush of nature gives it dim sympathies with me who live, making it a companionable form, whose puny flaps and freaks the idling spirit by its own moods interprets, everywhere echo or mirror seeking of itself, and makes a toy of thought. But oh, how oft at school, with most believing mind, presageful, have I gazed upon the bars to watch that fluttering stranger, and as oft with unclosed lids, already had I dreamt of my sweet birthplace, and the old church tower, whose bells, the poor man's only music, rang from morn to evening, all the hot fair day, so sweetly, that they stirred and haunted me with a wild pleasure, falling on mine ear most like articulate sounds of things to come. So gazed I, till the soothing things I dreamt lulled me to sleep, and sleep prolonged my dreams. And so I brooded all the following morn, awed by the stern preceptor's face, mine eye fixed with mock study on my swimming book. Save if the door half opened, and I snatched a hasty glance, and still my heart leaped up, for still I hoped to see the stranger's face, townsman, or aunt, or sister more beloved, my playmate, when we both were clothed alike. Dear babe, that sleepest cradled by my side, whose gentle breathings heard in this deep calm fill up the interspersed vacancies and momentary pauses of the thought. My babe, so beautiful, it thrills my heart with tender gladness thus to look at thee and think that thou shalt learn far other lore and in far other scenes. For I was reared in the great city, pent mid cloisters dim, and saw naught lovely but the sky and stars. But thou, my babe, shalt wander like a breeze. by lakes and sandy shores, beneath the crags of ancient mountain, and beneath the clouds which image in their bulk both lakes and shores and mountain crags. So shalt thou see and hear the lovely shapes and sounds intelligible of that eternal language which thy God utters, who from eternity doth teach himself in all, and all things in himself. Great universal teacher, he shall mold thy spirit, and by giving make it ask. Therefore, all seasons shall be sweet to thee. Whether the summer clothe the general earth with greenness, or the redbreast sit and sing betwixt the tufts of snow on the bare branch of mossy apple tree, while the nigh thatch smokes in the sun thaw, whether the eavesdrops fall, heard only in the trances of the blast, or if the secret ministry of frost shall hang them up in silent icicles, quietly shining to the quiet moon.